And the ask approach is research-backed, practice-tested in many different contexts. And it's five learnable steps that we can all undertake, that we can all practice to maximize the chances that we really can learn what we most need to find out from people who are often unlikely to tell us. So do you want me to walk you through the five
practices? Let's do practices? It. This is awesome. Let's go.
Okay, great. So number one is called choose curiosity. And that is that switch that flipped in me in that back of the Uber to say, I'm shifting from thinking I'm the righteous, I'm the better person, I'm, you know, whatever, to there's something I can learn. And it's a recognition that there is something important to learn from every single person. And that this kind of curiosity is not a trait that some people have and other people lack. It's not a state of mind that we're stuck in. I'm curious, or I'm just not curious today. It's a decision. It's a choice that's always available to us. And very simply, when we make the choice to choose curiosity, we center in that, in our minds, that question, what can I learn from this person? Hmm. And when we center that question, it pushes away other questions like, why are they such a jerk? Or why are they so stupid? Or how do I get them to do this? And instead it opens new questions. It opens the space for new questions to come in like, well, what do they see that I don't see? Or how might they look at this situation? Or what's motivating them? Or how am I impacting them? Those are the questions that start to become present in our minds. And when we feel genuinely curious, I believe we radiate an energy that leads people to want to share with us. I have a mentor. Say, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it feels, the energy feels uplifting. It feels as though it will awaken you even when you might be fatigued for any number of life-related reasons.
Exactly.
It does feel as though, there might be something here. And I think there's this tension, and we have a value in one of my businesses, which is about the genuine fear of missing out an important perspective. And whether you're driven by that fear or whether you come at it with, I'm just genuinely curious, I'll be honest, I'm not really worried which way it comes.
Sure.
I just want you to sort of show up with that intent.
Exactly. You got it. That is choosing curiosity and the impact it has. So that's number one. Then number two is called make it safe. And it's a recognition that even if I'm curious to learn from you, if you don't feel safe to tell me your truth, especially if it's a hard truth, chances are I'm not going to find this out. And I learned this the hard way as an operating leader when, you know, I thought things were going well and I was asking my team, how's it going? And, you know, behind the scenes, things were blowing up and no one felt safe enough to tell me. Right. And I, you know, it killed me because if I had found out, I would have helped. I could have rolled up my sleeves. We could have cleared out the barriers, but people thought they needed to give me the good news. They need to make themselves look good. And so making it safe is really about, making it more comfortable, easy, and appealing for others to let us know what's really going on for them.
Right.
And in the book, I identify a set of strategies that I call the safety cycle that help us to make it safe, including how do we create connection and when and where do we create connection with other people? How do we open up first so that they're not guessing at our agenda for asking questions? Mm-hmm. How do we do what I call radiate resilience, which is to demonstrate and let them know and show them through our behaviors that we can handle their truth.
Yeah.
Even for example, I have a former colleague who used to say, please give me your most critical feedback on this. And when he would ask me that question, I knew he could handle my truth. Yeah. He was not looking for, you know, just some compliments or whatever. So there's a whole set of ways that we can enact each of those strategies. That's part of the safety cycle, all about making it safe. Number three is called pose quality questions. This is the heart of the ask approach. And this is a recognition that not everything that has a question mark is a quality question. A lot of what we think are questions or what passes for questions, I call crummy questions. These are questions that block learning, that lead people to feel manipulated or confused or attacked. My favorite is just when someone will say something and they'll say, isn't that right? And they may genuinely think they want to know, do you agree with it? But it's a very difficult thing for someone to disagree with when you formulate the question that way. I call that a clumsy question, as all distinct from a quality question. And you know, one of the things that you said earlier that I really agree with is we don't teach people how to ask quality questions. And I think it's fascinating because most of us in our life spend our, you know, one form or another having conversations, whether in work or life, which is all just about making statements and asking questions. And yet no one ever teaches us the difference between a quality question and a crummy question, or the fact that there is an actual learnable taxonomy of different quality question strategies. And it's not infinite. There's probably a dozen of them. If we could master that dozen, we would learn so much more. One of my favorite of the, of that taxonomy is a strategy called request reactions. And request reactions is just to simply, explain something to someone or give them feedback or offer a direction and then say, hey, what's your reaction to that? How does that land with you? What does that make you think? How does that sit with you? What might I be missing? Any of those is a strategy that essentially invites the other person's thinking about our thinking. So if there's gaps in our thinking, or if our thinking, if they disagree with our thinking, or if they have something new to say, we're far more likely to find that out than if we don't ask that. Or if we ask a question like, does that make sense? Or isn't that right?
Mm. I get that. And it's funny, isn't it? Because the desire to want to move quickly on anything is often truncated by those kind of pseudo confirmatory questions that don't really allow the space to actually respond to whatever it is that's there. And I'm guilty of that. I mean, I think there's plenty of people who have gone, I just need you to see my point of view. I'm going to offer you I'm going to dangle out there a kind of question that kind of semi keeps a door ajar, but it's actually not a real door.
Yeah.
It's just going to slam a little bit shut just as you get to the point of crafting an answer to my question. I think we could all do a lot better than that.
Right. And I have a mentor who says, you can either pay now or pay later. So if the other person disagrees with you or is demotivated by what you say or whatever, and you think, oh, I'm saving time, I don't want to hear that, you're going to pay later. You're going to pay three times as much later versus if you take the extra maybe 30 seconds that it takes to ask the question and find out, did it land?
I love that. I love that. I feel as though I'm going to go reread your book again. I need to relearn some of this.
I do think this taxonomy of questions, when I talk to groups and organizations, that's the thing that people say, can you print that out? Can I put that in front of my computer or whatever? Because it's just very tactical and concrete and learnable. So anyways, that's number three. Number four is called listen to learn. And that essentially means that no matter how good your questions are, it all comes down to, do you actually hear the answers? And there's a big difference between listening to learn and listening to prove a point, or listening to look smart, or listening to be right, or listening to get out of here. And most of us think we're listening, and we're not actually listening. And so listening to learn is bringing that back, that intention to say, what's the most important things that someone is telling me, and how do I really hear them? And to not just listen for the content of what someone's saying, but also to be listening for the emotion of what they're saying and displaying, and the actions that they're taking. So this idea of listening for content, emotion, and actions essentially triples the amount of information that we hear in a conversation. And most of us are, I think, given to one or the other. I tend to first go to content. And so I've had to train myself to say, how do I listen for emotion? How do I listen for action as well in a conversation? And when you can do that, it's kind of analogous to when a music aficionado can hear a piece and they can hear the drums and the vocals and the harmony and the violin and whatever else it may be. It's just such a much richer piece. And so when I do this with people, I will play a clip from a meeting or a show and say, listen for content. Now listen for emotion. Now listen for action. And the differences of what people take away are fascinating.
It is fascinating. Tell me, whenever you're in a meeting and you see, or a conversation, you see somebody reach to take a note for something that's just been said, because it's obviously struck a chord, and they're writing down whatever the scribble is that has gone on the page or on the iPad or whatever else to sort of anchor back to that. Is there a way for somebody, and I ask this question because often I will come back from a meeting and I will see what I've written and I can't anchor back to the content easily. It was some scribble that it was two words, and I look back and I just go, oh, I know that was important. Now I've got to really dig hard to get back to the relevance of that. I'm wondering whether, given what you've just described, is there any kind of model you're aware of that if you were to write a note to highlight something that was very important in a conversation that came as a consequence of listening like you've described, is there a way to make a note or to make that relevant, so when I come back and visit it tomorrow, the next day, the next week, that it actually holds the same gravity or gives me a good reminder?
So I have an interpersonal strategy and a technology strategy for you.
I'd love to hear it, because this is one of those tactical things that happens to me quite a bit.
So I don't know if you've been in conversations, but sometimes in conversations, I will say this or someone else will say this. You know, let's say that you've said something that I think is particularly important that I might scribble down. I think a move that you can make is to also say, what you just said is so important. I want to just check. I want to say it back to you and check. Reflection. Did I hear that right? And I want to underscore. I want to stamp it for myself. I want to actually just make sure that I've really captured it. Mm-hmm. I think doing that makes it stickier in your own mind. Also might give you a chance to write down more than just one or two words. And if you can follow it by saying, and tell me a little bit more about that, you can get a little bit more of the context around it, all of which I think helps to really, make it stick for you. And further sends the other person a message. Wow, that's really, they really care about what I have to say. Because it is validating to see someone take a note, but it's even more, I think, affirming when they actually tell you back and say, what does it mean to them as well?
Yes. That's it. It's super helpful. Thank you. That's a very selfish question to ask, but thank you.
I love it. And the technology, I'll just say, you know, these note takers with whether, you know, AI or whether, you know, on video chat or there's, you know, a bunch that I'm using now, I think are fascinating because they allow, you know, then you can literally just get the transcript and you can put those two words that you scribbled into it and you can say, take me back to that moment of the conversation and you can get the two paragraphs. And I think that's just pretty powerful too.
It's very cool. Very cool.
Yeah. The final step of the ask approach is called reflect and reconnect. This is my favorite because I am a junkie for learning, as we established at the beginning. And reflection is really how we learn. Mm-hmm. Reflection is how we squeeze the insight out of our experiences and we convert the insight into action. And I think a lot of us think, I don't have time for reflection. I'd have to go on some, you know, meditation retreat if I really want to reflect. But in this step, I try to make reflection just very simple and pragmatic. And I talk about a method called sift it and turn it. So sift it is basically to say, you know, if somebody said to me 30 things in the course of a conversation, let me just go back through my notes or through my memory and sift out what are the three or four most important things that I take away from this conversation. And sometimes it helps to sift it with a friend or a coach or a mentor so I don't sift the wrong things. But sifting is really important because not everything that someone said is equally important. Some things are just not valuable for us to pay attention to or take in. So sifting it and then turning it is just to simply say, let me turn it over in my mind three times. The first time is to say, how does what they said affect my story? Like in that Uber ride, I had a new story about the person based on that. The second is, what steps can I take based on that? Is there something different that I can do based on what I learned? And the third is there something here that affects my deeper stuff that maybe sheds some light on a bias that I have or an assumption that I was holding or a way of being? And so turning it for your story, your steps and your stuff is a way to really squeeze the learning out of it. And then I call it reflect and reconnect because that reconnection, I think, is the most important part of the whole thing, which is to go back to the person and say, thanks for taking the time. Thanks for taking the risk. Here's what I learned from you. Here's what I'm going to do about what I learned from you. Mm. How does that line up to what you were hoping I would learn? Is there anything different you would have wanted me to take away from the conversation? And that really sends the message to the other person, like, you didn't waste your time. And look how powerful you are in terms of influencing me and how much I value you. And I think it radically increases the chance that they're going to want to continue to share over time.